I'm Natalie.
And I'm Gerald.
Welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast.
Conversations with local passionate runners, because to run a city is to know a city.
This conversation of the Sweet Run Podcast is sponsored by Inside Tracker. Founded in 2009 by experts in aging, genetics, and biometric data, Inside Tracker has evolved into the leader in health span optimization. So go to our landing page, insidetracker.com/sweetrun, and at checkout, use the code SWEETRUN to save 25% off. More Olympic marathon trials conversations, because we just can't get enough. This week, we are so happy to welcome Mariah Earle to the Sweet Run Podcast. Mariah just ran a 2:39.46 at the 2024 U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials, and she is 45 years old. Mariah continues to inspire us all to believe in our dreams. This is also her second consecutive appearance at the U.S. Marathon Trials. In this conversation, we talk about the race itself, the day, how she felt, the starting line, the finish, and so much more. We also talk about her coaching. Mariah is a track and cross-country coach at UC San Diego, and she's also a private coach. Then we talk about where she lives and trains in gorgeous San Diego. She lays it all out for us, where she likes to go running, dining out, races, everything, all of it in San Diego. So we can't wait to share this conversation with you guys. So let's get right into it with Mariah Earle.
I'll do my best. I got a glimpse at the questions. I was like, oh man, they want someone younger who goes out. Yeah. I don't know if I can answer these, but yeah, I'll do my best on them.
Okay. Sounds good. Mariah Earle, welcome to the Sweet Run Podcast. We're so happy to have you on the show.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on the show. This is fun.
Awesome. How are you feeling? It's been a week, or not quite
a week.
No, quite
a week.
just about. I feels like yesterday and also like a year ago. Like it's like that weird, did that really happen type of scenario? But I feel really good. This is probably the least sore I've ever been after a marathon. And I think like a lot of that had to do with how flat it was. And I bounced back really fast. I'm not running yet because I'm a firm believer in rest after a marathon. No matter how good you feel, everyone needs rest. So I'm being good. I haven't ran, been just relaxing and like eating all the foods and sleeping and like doing great.
Okay. So let me get one thing out of the way. What do you eat that people might think an elite runner wouldn't eat?
I mean, I think that for me, there's nothing that I don't eat. Like the only food that I really don't like is like my mom's meatloaf. And so I love my mom, but I still, as a kid, her meatloaf just like made me cry. So, I mean, I don't have any rules around food. Anything goes. I'm a coach at a college team in San Diego and we're traveling a lot. Like that means we're going to In-N-Out, we're going to Chick-fil-A, we're going to like, and you eat what you have. Like, so I don't have any rules against fast food. I eat pizza, I eat cheese, I eat everything. So
nice.
We love to hear that because I love pizza.
Yeah, me too.
So good. Okay, so what did you eat the morning of the Olympic marathon trials?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so nothing different. I'm a cereal lover. I eat cereal. So I actually, for the trials, I did bring a bowl with me of like my cereal that I eat before the race. And I had cereal and then I brought like a bagel just to like fill that gap in between like eating the cereal and running the race. Cause it's a little more of a time lapse between breakfast and running than I would normally have at home. But yeah, nothing fancy. I don't like, a lot of people do like the banana avocado toast, like oatmeal, a little more healthy. I'm just like pour the cereal in a box and dump some milk on it. That's me.
Simple and easy. Yeah. And you obviously got the job done. So there was only three women in the 45 to 49 age group that I was reading about. And I was like, this is incredible. 2:39 at the trials on Saturday. Tell us a little bit about the race. What was the feeling when you were standing on the starting line at your second Olympic marathon trials?
So kind of the same feeling I have before every marathon that I run. Like there's this moment of realization, like, oh, this is actually happening. Like we're actually doing this now, this thing that you've trained for months. And in this case, it was this race that I'd looked forward to for 2 years, like ever since qualifying at Grandma's 2 years ago. It's like all this buildup. And there's like almost this like calm before the storm of like, here we go. This is it. No turning back now. I will say that for this race, I felt like I had a little more like genuine excitement for it of like, I'm so happy I get to do this. There's been other races where I've been standing on the starting line with like abject terror of like, oh, we're going 26 today. So this was a little more joyous, a little bit more celebratory. I had a friend in the race with me who I know is a really good pacer. And so it made it simple for me to just be like, stick with Mary. Like it's Mary's going to be responsible about how she runs this race.
Okay. Now, when it comes to timing, was there a difference between the amount of when you qualified and when the trials were between Atlanta and Orlando, and which one did you prefer? What would you prefer in terms of I qualified here and I've got 2 years to wait or 6 months?
Oh yeah. Good point. Yeah. Cause I had, yeah, for Atlanta, I qualified at CIM, like, which was like an 11-week training cycle. And this was like 2 years here. We like figure it out. That is an excellent question. I think that I liked the 2 years because I could like play around with other distances. There wasn't that pressure of trying to get it like right before. I will say that when I qualified for Atlanta, I was still fairly new to the idea of even trying to qualify. So I don't think I really felt that pressure. I just knew I was fit. I knew what I'd done in Boston the spring before. And I was like, yeah, I think I can take some time off that. And back then the qualifying time was 2:45. And I'd ran 2:46 at Boston without a carbon plate. So I was like, oh, I got bouncy shoes on now. And of course, that's not Boston. Like I felt pretty good about running that 2:45. And then it ended up being like significantly faster. Like it was a really good day. But I think I like the longer. I just like a long build, especially being older. I think it takes me a little bit longer to gain fitness, which is funny because I like lose it in a second. But like I like to have time to like play around with the training and build it up.
Nice. Don't you hate that? I feel the same way. I feel like we spend so much time getting fit and then it feels like it evaporates in a moment.
And it doesn't. A lot of that's just like the lies we tell ourselves as runners because we're like self-conscious and like, and because we do work so hard to get to where we got to, like, no. And that's part of the reason people rush the recovery is like, they're so scared of losing that fitness, but you really don't lose that much. And you can't be in peak fitness all the time. You've got to let it slide a little bit here and there. And it's honestly kind of fun to build it back, like to start seeing that improvement again. Like, okay, like that workout kicked my butt this week. But then like 4 weeks from now, I'm going to do longer reps and I'm going to come through at the same pace that I was coming through on this workout that kicked my butt. So it is kind of a fun process.
Yes. Who did you bring with you to Orlando? Did you have a whole crew?
No, I traveled solo. It was just me, like in Atlanta, my dad and my sisters, and I had an uncle that I hadn't seen in like 25 years come, and a cousin. And I think like this one was like, okay, she already did that. but I am fortunate because I've been in the like running scene for a little while now that I can show up to these races and feel like I know tons of people, and like, and it's kind of a reunion of people that I only see at races. There's another woman I know who she's just an incredible runner. She actually represented the U.S. at Doha at World Championships in the marathon. Her name's Kelsey Bruce. And like, I've gotten to know her through like being on elite starting lines with her. And then we ended up rooming together 1 year at a race. And now she's a coach in Texas. So I see her through the coaching world, and like seeing her at the finish line was just like having family there. Getting to room with people, like I room with my friend Mary, who I paced off of, and like I only get to see her at races because now she lives in Colorado. So like, even though I didn't travel a big crew with me, I just felt like I was surrounded by people. And one of the athletes I coach lives in Orlando, and she like was so excited I was coming, like picked me up from the airport, took care of me. She and her husband drove me around. Like, it was so funny the days leading up to the race. She was like pointing out every curb to me and like making sure I didn't trip when I walked, like watch your step, Mariah, and like just babying me and like made me feel really special. So like, it's kind of amazing that like, even though your immediate family isn't there, like everywhere you go, you feel like there's family with you.
Now, you mentioned, you know, having, you know, good camaraderie and this reunion type feel with people you started on the, you know, the elite starting lines with. Does that change at all when it's the Olympic trials and it's like the morning of? Does it Does the vibe shift a little bit in the competitive juices?
Yeah, like, so it's kind of funny you ask that because I've had this conversation and not so much. I mean, the Olympic trials is a little different because, like, I know I'm not going to be top three. Like, it's not like I'm not even going to be top 10. So there's no money on the line for me. Like, there's really no reason for me to be like cutthroat with any of my friends. And I've had this conversation with my friends who I train with. Like, we agree, like, we're friends in training, we're friends in the race, but like at the end of the day, it's a race and we're going to like fight each other to the finish and then hug afterwards. And like, both sides of that are genuine. Like, I both genuinely want to beat you. And I'm also like super happy that you're there at the finish line, a step ahead of me or a step behind me. Like, so it is this like weird, like dual relationship we're able to carry. And like, I was telling my athletes this week, like when they asked me about the race, I was like, oh, I was like a drunk person out there because like every time I saw a woman I admired, I told her I loved her. And like people I'd never met before, like at one point in the race, Kim Conley passed me. And like, I realized it was Kim Conley and I just like poured out my heart to her and she like ran even faster away from me. And like, but it was just, I was so happy to be out there and I was so happy to see like, especially like the running celebrities, like those are my celebrities. I don't care if like Taylor Swift is sitting next to me. Like, that's great. But like, you show me like Jenny Simpson or like Emily Sisson and all those like women that are like my celebrities. So I was a little bit like starstruck the whole weekend. And I carried that into the race with me.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason why I asked you that question, because you weren't, you know, vying for a top three spot, you know, but you're still a competitor. So, hey, I don't care who's out there, where I'm coming in, I'm going for it. Right.
Yeah. And like, I kicked at the finish. I tried. I started to move a little bit with 2 miles to go and I felt someone come up behind me and I knew it wasn't the woman I'd just passed. Cause like, you just get a sense for that. So there's another woman that was moving a little bit better than me. And I was like, okay, her, like latch on to her. And I started thinking in terms of like, I was like, oh, she's going to catch that girl. That means like, oh, we're going to catch that girl. And then like, oh, we're going to catch that other one. And so it was just like the last 2 miles was so fun. Just like targeting people up ahead and seeing if you could catch them. And like, I'm a competitor. I love all the women I compete against and I do it simultaneously.
You know what I love about that is the fact that there was 149 women that actually started the race. So it's amazing because you can be running and say, how far up can I be as the best in the United States? And you know, and you were 61st, is that correct?
Yeah.
So like, that's incredible. Like, out of all the people that run in the US that run marathons, you are the 61st fastest woman.
On that day, I mean, like a lot of people dropped out, but you know, you got to finish the race. That's part of it, right?
Yes.
So, I know, it feels good. Like it feels good to like have had a solid day out there and to do it on like a stage with a little more pressure and a little bit more like distraction around it. Yeah.
What was the atmosphere at the starting line with your celebrities, the women that you look up to, that you've been following for so long, as well as all these women who've worked so hard to get there? What did it feel like standing there?
Yeah, it felt festive. Like, you definitely felt the nerves off of some people. But I think the overall vibe was like a lot of joy. Like, everyone was like super excited to be there. And even the ones that were up there in contention, like I tried to give them their distance because I know their goals are different and I don't want to distract. But I think like genuinely people felt like this was a celebration and a competitive celebration, but it wasn't like a super intense starting line.
I was reading that there was over 100,000 spectators out there on the streets of Orlando, which I was like, as a, you know, someone who's loved the sport for so long, that made me so happy. How did you feel like it was crazy, you know, supportive out there?
Yeah, it was loud. And like, I think sometimes those really super loud crowds can get a little bit overwhelming and kind of give you too much of an adrenaline spike. I think having been in Atlanta, in some ways I felt like Atlanta was louder. Like, mainly that like first corridor when you started the race was just packed with people. And I remember getting just like really swept up in that and just feeling overwhelmed. And maybe having that experience, like this time I handled the noise a little bit better. And it seemed to be more evenly spread out throughout the race, but like, you never really felt like you were without support out there. It was great. Like, there were a lot of people out there and like, is cool when you can pick out voices too. Like some people I've known throughout running, I could hear their voice and I'd look over and, oh, there's Nick on the sidelines like cheering. And so it was like masses, but also you could still hear the specific people. It was cool.
That is cool. And did you have a technique, whether it was this race, Atlanta, or any others, where you, so you don't get caught up in the hype and maybe like burn yourself out like early in a race, getting too jazzed?
Yeah, I think like I didn't know to be prepared for that for Atlanta. Like it had never really occurred to me, except for maybe at Boston. Boston's kind of like that, but like Atlanta was worse. I think in this one, I actually took the time to think about it. I was like, oh yeah, it's going to be loud. Like don't let yourself get carried away in Atlanta. And just kind of even like acknowledging that could happen, I think helped me be prepared for it. Not so much a technique, but just like recognizing that that could be an issue in the race.
Are you self-coached, Mariah, or do you have a coach?
I am self-coached. I like the process. I really believe everyone should have a coach. Like, but I think being like coaching such a variety of people, because I have the college team and then I do like private coaching on the side, I can sort of like catch myself sometimes saying something to an athlete and being like, oh yeah, you should probably tell yourself that like the next time you're in a workout. So like being a coach makes me a better runner, I think. So I am self-coached. I've given some thought to the idea of like having a paid professional coach, but so far I feel like I'm so busy that I don't know. I feel like I'd be a disappointment to a coach because I'd have to move stuff around all the time and like make adjustments, but maybe someday.
Well, I'd say you're doing a fantastic job coaching yourself. I mean, your times are incredible. So everyone's been talking about this question, the weather in Orlando and the start time. How did the weather affect you being out there running?
Yeah. So I love hot weather. Like I can't say that I'm like, I definitely got hot in that race. And I think that maybe the weather wasn't ideal for like fastest running conditions, but I regularly run at noon in 80 degree heat. And it's not because I'm trying to heat acclimate. It's because I enjoy it. Like I like it. I can get my head around that a lot more than I can like 40 degrees. Like 40 degrees, I'm like wearing 12 layers and crying. So this like, while I will say like this probably wasn't as fast as I could have run if the weather had been a little cooler, like I don't think it had affected me the way it did other people. And I could hear that in the beginning like lap of the race. There were people that were 4 or 5 miles in breathing pretty heavily that I knew were like faster than me. And I was like, oh, they're having a harder time than I am. So like, I know that like maybe it's because I'm older, I have thinner skin, like things just like I cool myself better. Like,
I don't know. Well, living in beautiful San Diego, I mean, You're used to having sunshine all the time, but it's it is different with the humidity. I'm glad.
Yeah, it wasn't that humid. I didn't think it was that humid. Okay. So I think the humidity was around 53% or something during the race time. Like I did dump water. I took precautions to stay cool. Not so much because I felt like, oh, I'm overheating, but just like, oh, this seems like a smart thing to do. Like everyone else is dumping water. Like I should dump water. In fact, they had misters on the course and I sort of found those annoying. I was like, oh, this is going to get my glasses spotted. But yeah, like, so I don't think the humidity was really that bad, but maybe that's just because I handle like being warm a little bit better.
Nice. What was in your bottles? What kind of nutrition do you take in?
I use the Morton, the 360 drink mix, and then I alternate between Morton and water. And they had water on course, and I was a little bit nervous about my ability to like drink from a bottle that didn't have like a squeeze lid. So I have my bottles, they have squeeze lids, so I would alternate between the Morton and the water, and then I grab gels to supplement. But that's what I use.
Do you use Morton gels as well or another gel?
Yeah, I use the Morton. I take a caffeinated one at the starting line. And then at some point during the race, I'll take a second caffeinated gel, like usually, I think around mile 14 or so, like before, like just around that halfway point, I'll hit another caffeinated gel. And then I probably did 7 gels the whole race or 5 gels. I don't know. I calculated it out. Like I'm not super like exact on my nutrition. I tend to like wing it a little bit every time. And I know as a coach, that's bad to say, but I got in about 700 calories during the race, I think, plus water.
That's awesome. I use Morton as well. And I always feel like when I take the caffeinated gels, I'm like, whoa, did it give you a jolt? Do you feel like it gives you a jolt?
A little bit. I'm a high octane caffeine gal, so like I'm not Red Bulls or anything, but I do drink a lot of coffee. I drink my coffee black because like as a kid, I was like, if I'm going to drink coffee, I'm going to drink it the right way and like no cream and sugar. Like we just do it. So I think I maybe have a high caffeine tolerance.
I love that. I love to hear that. So okay, the halfway point comes in this race, this amazing huge race. How do you feel after the halfway point?
Mm-hmm. I think at the halfway point, I came through in like 118 and I was like, oh, okay, easy math there. Like that's a 236. And I was like, yeah, we're not running 236 today. Like, so by the half, I already knew that like things were getting hard. Like the first lap felt so good. And then like very quickly in the second lap, it went to like, okay, yeah, this is going to be it. We're going to have to fight for the rest of this. So halfway point, I was already starting to think like, damage control, save something for that third lap. Like, is this going to be like, you're going to have to like go to work. So I maybe backed off a touch. I have some sort of like heart palpitations sometimes. I've had some episodes over the last few years and I think it was right around or just past the half where I felt like my heart rate spike. And so I sort of like panicked a little bit. I was like, just calm down, like relax. Like, and I think that's where I like started to back off a little bit and just settle in some more to like, we don't want to blow up. So play it a little safer. And honestly, I felt like most of the people around me weren't really moving. Like they weren't gaining or leaving. So I think we were all like in that same spot right there. So that sort of helped.
Okay. Now I was going to ask, you alluded to this, with finding someone coming up on you, latching on to them, and then also at the halfway point assessing yourself and how things are going. I always find it interesting to hear people's perspective on when do you start racing, because you're not it's not right off the line and we're going, it's not 100 meter sprint.
No, I think it's different every race. Like in this one, I think I started racing with two to go. In other races, definitely I've felt like the last 4 to 6 miles is where I'll start to push. Like for me, if a race is going well, it's not hot. Like this one, I had a little bit of cramping in the last 10K. So I was a little more hesitant to push 4 miles out. But if a race is going reasonably, like 4 miles is sort of my demarcation of like, yeah, I know I can like fake my way through 4 miles, like no matter what happens, like let's start to like think about like, not suddenly like going 0 to 90, but like you start to like pick it up. Mm-hmm.
What was the finish line like? It looked on, we were here watching on TV and it looked very just prestigious and celebratory and it seemed like it was a big deal. What was it like finishing? Yeah.
Is a big deal. I mean, just that whole home stretch, you hear people cheering, especially when I think they could see like I was trying to kick. Like everyone's so supportive in the running world. Like I say that to people all the time. Like the marathon is probably the only place in the world where like literally everyone around you wants you to succeed, whether that's a competitor or a spectator. Like there's just so much like positive energy. And you definitely felt that down the home stretch of this race and crossing the finish line. Like you sort of like take a second, you have this like flood of relief that is over and like the excitement of finishing. And then in this race, it's a little bit extra special because you look over and you see someone with an American flag and you're like, oh, that's an Olympian. Like that is cool. And I think the first person I saw was Clayton Young with his flag. And I'm like, oh man, this is Olympic trials. I just finished. Like that guy's going to the Olympics. Like that's kind of an extra special treat on this one.
That's incredible too, that they were, the top six, that are going to the Olympics were still there and had the flag and you were able to see that.
Yeah. And I know they have all their media and stuff. So like I didn't get to see Emily Sisson and Dakota Lindworms and Fiona O'Keefe's like victory lap. I was still a few miles out when they were doing their victory lap up and down the finish line area. But like you do see them walking around with the flags after the race. And it's just like, it just really like hits home how special it is to be there and be a part of it.
You are such a role model on so many levels as a marathoner, as a female marathoner, and as a master's female marathoner. You're an inspiration to me, and I'm sure I know you are for so many people listening. How does that make you feel?
Strange. Like, I don't think of it that way. I I think that in this sport, we all inspire each other. Like I'm not joking when I say that being a coach makes me a better athlete. I coach a number of women who are in their 50s and 60s and older, and I see the workouts I give them and they just destroy them. And then they hit it again. And like, so I get so much inspiration from my athletes. I mean, I have 60-year-olds who are running like 75-mile weeks and like crushing 15-mile threshold or like tempo workouts, like marathon cutdowns, not threshold. That'd be crazy. But they're doing these monstrous workouts that I give to myself at my paces, but like effort is effort. And then like I'll have a devastating day. And so like I've learned not to give them the same workout I have on the same time because it's just bad for my self-esteem, right? Like I don't like, how did she hit it? Like, so I know this workout can be done because I have the excuse of like, oh, like I just wrote that workout too hard. Like I was too hard on myself. I shouldn't have written myself that workout. But then I see like my athlete did it and I'm like, well, dang it. So like, I don't know. Like, I just think that there's so many places to draw inspiration from in this sport. And like, if I'm one of them, that's awesome. Like, I hope I can be, but I also like get it back from everyone I meet.
I love to hear that.
You know, you mentioned your coaching and with your private athletes. What type of coach are you to yourself versus mm-hmm. maybe your college athletes and then your privates? Is there a difference? Or are you pretty even keel? You get what you get all the way through, even with yourself.
I mean, I think the difference comes from athlete to athlete, like not necessarily, like even within like my private athletes, I have to coach some of them a little differently. I have to learn what they respond to. So like, I'm definitely not like the like suck it up and do it coach. Like, I think I'm more of a like, let's be practical about this. And like, okay, like what can we do differently next time? I've got a little bit of like cheerleader in me. Like, I'm always going to find a positive spin on something. Like, I think that everything is a learning opportunity, and some of like my worst workouts have been the most important for me on race day. So like, I can honestly like coach someone through a bad session and like find a way like, okay, like that didn't go to plan. Like, we didn't hit the paces, but like, now you know what to do when you get into miles 17, 18 of a marathon and like how to fight your way through it, like how to not give up on a bad day, like how to not give up on a bad race. Like, I think those lessons are like so vital to the marathon because so much can happen in that race. So like, I think it just depends on the person as to how I approach that. I think when it comes to coaching myself, like I'm a pretty honest coach. Like I think that that's a big thing of like being an athlete. And especially like if you're an athlete coaching yourself, is like, you've got to be honest. Like that goes both ways. Like you can't be too hard on yourself. You can't be too easy on yourself. You have to be like real with like whatever effort you were expecting that day. And like, did I actually do it? And that's the line that I think some people have a hard time walking. Like, I think a lot of athletes are like convinced that they have to always like beat themselves up and be like so, so hard on themselves. And like, everything is like just their hair is on fire and the world is spinning because that's what they think it means to be an athlete. And like, that's not true. Like, you know, like neither is everything always being sunshine and roses, but like, you have to learn to like evaluate yourself honestly as an athlete and a coach.
What was your training like going into this for the block? Getting ready for the trials. Give us a snapshot. How many miles are you running per week? And is there a certain workout that you feel like, this is my bread and butter? If I can hit this, I feel like I'm ready.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I ran New York in the pro field this year. So I had kind of a short build from New York to the trials. But I put in a ton of miles this past fall. Like, so when I was building for New York, I was sort of building for it with the idea that I was going to roll that fitness into a short trials build. So I made the focus of that one, like as many weeks over 100 miles as I could get. And I nearly like destroyed myself, like not because I got injured, but like I mentally broke down. Like, there was one morning where I was like, oh, I can sleep in until 6 a.m. Like, I don't have to get up at 4:45. I don't have to get up at 5. Like, I have an easy 10-mile run. I can sleep in until 6. So my alarm goes off and I look at it and it's not the time I set it for. It's an hour later. Like, I had set it for the wrong time. And I just like burst into tears crying because like now I had to run after work and I wasn't going to be able to get my 10 miles in. And I just like sat there like bawling. My boyfriend runs upstairs like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I'm hysterical. And I'm like, okay, that should have been a sign right then and there, because like no single 10-mile run is going to make you or break you in the marathon. I could have let that thing go and I would have been exactly the same fitness. But like psychologically, like I just broke that day. So I think I learned a little bit from that cycle. Like, but at the same time, I think like the miles I did put in there really helped play into my trials build. So for this build, I took like a week off after New York. I got sick for 2 weeks, which was annoying. I could still run. I just ran easy, didn't do a lot of quality. And then went to Denver for a week for a coaching convention. And I tried to do quality sessions, but I was at 7,000 feet. So like, I had no idea what to think of it. Like, I know I ran hard, but those times were terrible. Like, I don't think I ran 1 mile at marathon pace, and I was like trying as hard as I could. But then I started to get into a little bit of a flow and workouts started clicking. And it wasn't until like 4 weeks out that I started thinking like, oh, this might be a good race. Like, I'm starting to feel like finally it's coming together. I was hitting some paces that I hadn't hit for a while. You asked about bread and butter workout, and I think like there's one, and this goes back to me saying like sometimes the worst workouts are the best ones for your race. Like, so my nemesis workout is 3x3 miles at lactate threshold pace with like a 3-minute recovery. I absolutely hate that workout. Like, I think I've only hit it twice or something. Like, but I know that even when it goes badly, like, I still benefit from it. I still get the psychological benefit of working through it. When I had that one in this cycle, I tried to do it on the track because it like logistically just fit into my day better. And like, that's a lot of circles on the track, 3x3 miles. And like 2 miles into it, I was already 13 seconds off pace. And like, so there's a lot of feedback on the track too, right? Like, you can check your splits every 100 meters if you want to and like know where you're at. So like, I bailed on it. I was like, this isn't happening. I'm starting to slow down to marathon pace. I don't want to run marathon pace today because I'm running it in 2 days in my long run. And so like, I just freaked out and started running like 300 meter intervals as fast as I could. And like, I didn't know what to do. Like, it was one of those moments where I was like, I want to get a workout in. I'm not hitting lactate threshold. I don't want to run marathon pace because it ruins my weekend workout. So like, instinctively, I started sprinting. And like, never in a million years would I tell an athlete to like start running 300s instead of lactate threshold. Like, there's no benefit from that. But like, I was really happy that even as like chaotic as that day was, like, it didn't get to me. I was like, whatever. Like, I know that sometimes that workout, like, that's the worst it's ever gone. But but it was like a good like frame of reference. Like, okay, I'm in a good headspace. Like, this isn't getting to me. Like, I got other workouts to crush. Like, let that one go.
That's a really good way to process and not get so down on yourself. I love to hear that. Now, with the majority of your marathon training, are you training alone? Do you train with a team? What does that look like?
I train mostly alone, and it's usually like right before I start at UCSD in the morning. Every chance I get, I will run with someone. I have a friend that is lives close to the school. She runs with me sometimes for my easy runs. We'll meet up. We actually had coffee today, and I was joking like, I didn't know we were allowed to have coffee if we weren't running first. Like, I don't ever see anyone outside of running. And then I have like, that's my friend Angela, and then my friend Aaron is really good about, he gets together with me and like, will, in fact, he's part of the reason I qualified for trials. Was like, we were out for a training run as I was training for grandma's marathon in 2022. And I was like, I got marathon pace, and like, it wasn't going well. And I was ready to quit on it. And then he looks at me and he goes, I'm not going to be the reason you don't qualify for the Olympic trials. And so like, we started running 5:55s after that. And so I was like, I have some really good friends that I can call upon when I need to. Like, and I love them for it.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, when you say that, like, I process it in my mind, like, I don't run that pace, but 5:55 per mile for 26.2 miles continuously, it is just hauling butt. Like, that is so, and like, I also feel like I want to ask you, you know, when you have those days where you're kind of like, okay, I am not running marathon pace, like, do you get to the point that, you know, 5:55, you have talked about it in your head for so long that you're just like, okay, this is what it is, and doesn't feel so daunting? Because like, saying it out loud feels daunting.
Yeah, I have never experienced a marathon pace workout where I was like, this feels great. I can hold this pace for 26 miles. Like, I've never had marathon pace feel easy, including the races, but like, it tends to feel better in the races than it does in workouts. Like, it's just like one of those like weird things with race day magic. And a lot of that goes back to like accumulated fatigue. Like, you don't hardly ever do a marathon pace workout when you're tapered and rested and like don't have the adrenaline around you, but you learn to hit it for smaller batches with that fatigue in your legs. And like, that's sort of the secret to it. I'm really big on like long runs with marathon pace in it, like preferably towards the end. And just embracing the idea that like it's going to feel hard and don't let that get in your head.
Mm-hmm. How do you find the time to run 100 miles a week? What does that look like? Are you doing doubles?
I double 2 to 3 times a week. It's helpful that I coach a group on Tuesday nights for the San Diego Track Club. A lot of times, like, I, you know, I give them their workout at the start and then I can just like, I have nothing else to do but stand there and like coach them or like wait for them to come back around the lake so I can run. Like I can get in like, and my doubles are super easy. I don't do double lactate threshold sessions or anything like that. Like I just, it's easy running. It's 5 to 7 or 8 miles, usually 5 to 7. I've gone 8 miles for a double before and like that starts to feel like a whole nother workout. So like, I, you know, I think that like that sweet spot for me is in that 45 minute range and they're slow. Like I'll start off at like 9-10 minute pace and maybe work into the eights, but like, it doesn't need to be fast.
Do you take a day off during the week?
No, I go 7 days and then I'll take, if I need a day off, I'll take a day off. Like usually my coaching job at UCSD makes the days off for me. Like we'll have, especially during track season when like, you know, track meets start in the morning, we're up in LA, we're competing. Like the 10K is always like at 11 o'clock at night. And then we're getting in a van and like driving back from LA. So like, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not running those days. So, but like, I generally run 7 days a week. I think like staying mobile helps my joints stay loose. Like again, an old lady thing, like I do better with a little bit of like light running than I do with like full rest.
Mm-hmm. What about like all the little things? Like how often are you getting a massage and going to PT? Oh,
yeah, not as often as I should. I mean, like I'm not a role model. I have been really good about my pre-run mobility. I think like, so I do like hip mobility before I run. I do like some like calf raises. I have drills. I do my sprint. I was a 800 meter runner in college and a 200, 400 meter runner in high school. Like, so I still do my sprint drills before, like I do them before a marathon and I can sort of see people looking at me like, what is she doing? Like, why is she doing beef? But, or like hurdle drills. So I still do that. I think that helps like keeping my running mechanics clean when I run. So you're less prone to injury. I have in the past gone to a place called Prehab in San Diego. They're really great for stride analysis. Logistically, it's hard for me to get to where they're located, so I don't get to go there very often. And then there's a place in Solana Beach called Ascension Performance. The guy I see there is amazing with like figuring out what's wrong with me and like just tweaking my body so that it works the way it's supposed to. Like he found, I did see him before I went to go to trials and he's like, oh, your right hip is forward. Like, let me do a psoas adjustment. And then like, it was amazing. I felt great. So like, I do that maybe like a couple times a year, like not on a regular basis, but if I have a chance to get in, I'll go. It's important.
Pausing this conversation with Mariah for just a quick second to shout out our sponsor, Inside Tracker. Go to our landing page, insidetracker.com/sweetrun, and at checkout, use the code SWEETRUN to save 25% off. So quick and easy, get a very fast blood draw. They either come to your house or you go to get it done in about 10 minutes and let Inside Tracker take care of everything else. Suggestions on how to implement the changes that they have found based on your blood work will help you to become the best athlete and the best person that you can be in 2024 and beyond. So you guys, go check out Inside Tracker. And now let's get back to our conversation with Mariah Earle. So the end of the Olympic marathon trials, and I say that with such reverence, like it's such a special race and, you know, so many amazing people have, you know, the chance to qualify and it's just, it's very special. Once you cross the finish line and you get all the excitement of being at the finish and kind of seeing some of the athletes that are going to the Olympics, what happens after that? Do they take you? Do you get interviews or is there a media area or what happens after you're all finished?
Yeah, this is my first interview. So no, the media doesn't care so much about 61st place, but
well, we do. And we are honored to interview you. I'm so glad you said yes.
I'm so honored to be here. They shuttle you back to the hotel and that's kind of it from their logistical standpoint. But then there's like after parties for the athletes that they put on with their families. I got together with the coaching company that I work for is called Lift, Run, Perform. And my boss was there and she had to get together for me and another coach who was racing in trials. And like, so we went and had like tacos and a margarita and like, I think that was nice.
Good.
And yeah.
And do they supply wheelchairs at these party after parties? I mean, I'm like,
I know. Are you hobbling along at this point?
I'm just rolling around. Hey, how's it going?
Good. But we were laughing because they did have. So we were going back to the shuttle. Like they're like, oh, here's a golf cart to take you to the shuttle. So we like piled in. And I'm like, oh, it must be far. They literally drove us around the block to the bus. And I was like, just laughing. Cause I'm like, I definitely could have walked. But it was a nice, like, I didn't cramp or anything. So I was in like pretty good shape to walk around the corner, but they had like basically not wheelchairs. There probably were wheelchairs somewhere, but they did have like accommodations for those of us who weren't recovering as well from the race.
Yeah. Cause I'm thinking, maybe you get through like the adrenaline still high, right after, yeah. And you've got, I don't know, some window, but you know, you've gone back, you take a shower, get dressed again, and let's go out. Now I'm thinking, the rigor mortis is starting to set in. Like,
that's a good word for it. Yeah. I think I feel that on a daily basis anyhow, because I'm just like, I get up in the morning and like to go downstairs, it's one hand on the wall and one hand on the rail. I'm like, that's just my life. So I don't notice anything different when I run a marathon because everything's all crickety. But I had my athlete who was there had Normatec boots that she let me borrow for the race. And like, so after we got back from dinner, you know, I went back to the hotel like at 6:30 because I'm like such a party animal. But like I laid there in my bed, I put on the Normatec boots and I had work to do. Like I started working on my athletes, like training stuff for the next week. Like it was great. Like my roommate was still gone. I had the place to myself. Like my legs felt so good in those Normatec boots. I had them on for like an hour. Just like, I'm like, this is like heaven. Like I could just sit here on this bed, letting my legs get massaged by the air pressure. And like, I was the happiest girl in the world.
I would do. That sounds sweet.
Yeah.
What shoes do you train in and what do you race in?
Yeah, I'm a huge New Balance fan. I train almost exclusively in New Balance. I love the Rebels, the Fuel Cell Rebel. I haven't tried the new Fuel Cell Rebels. I'm terrified that they like change them and I'm not going to love them because that is like that's my go-to shoe. Like don't leave home without it. It's good for everything. I also love their Super Comp 3 as a trainer. I didn't like racing in it though. Like I felt like it didn't quite give me the pop back. Like, but it was a super fun shoe to wear. Like I felt great like on my long runs in them. I got a lot of work in that shoe. But when it came down to like selecting my weapon for race day, I went with the Alpha Flies. I just felt like the Alpha Fly was my fastest shoe. I think part of that comes from like not having the power to put down like I used to. It gives me a lot more energy return than some of the other ones. But like New Balance is like my blood. Like I love New Balance and it like broke my heart that I couldn't race in their shoe because like they're such a good brand. I love them.
Do they send you shoes?
They did. I was already a New Balance fan. So when I got into the pro field at New York, they sponsor that race. And so they reached out and asked if they could send me training shoes. And I was like, absolutely. Like, I love New Balance. Like, send me all the shoes. And like, I really, really, really wanted to race in their shoe. But like, at the end of the day, it caused me such anxiety before New York too, because I was like, what do I do? Like, I have these shoes. I love this company. But like, and people talk to me, they're like, you don't, like, you're not a professional runner. Like, you got to race in the shoe that you're going to feel the most confident in. And like, that was ultimately what I decided for both races. But like, so much love for New Balance. Like, I can't, like, even if they're not going to send me shoes anymore, like, I'm not looking for any sort of like free shoes from New Balance. I got a cool deal for New York. But like, even if I hadn't had that, like I'd wear their shoes all the time.
Nice.
Well, you know, you are such, like I said, you're such a role model and you are doing amazing things, whether you believe it or not. So you deserve whatever company is going to send you. You absolutely deserve that and so much more. That's what I think.
No, that's good.
Go ahead.
You mentioned, you know, your high school career being 400 meter runner and then 800 in college. What were some of the maybe two or three kind of key inflection points in your running career? Like where you started, where'd you fall in love? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's weird. I always knew I wanted to be a runner. Like, I don't know. I knew my dad ran. My dad ran in college. He was an 800 meter runner. I remember as a kid, like, he would go out for these, like, super long runs. Like, he'd be gone for, like, it felt like he was gone forever. He was probably gone for, like, an hour. But, like, back then, like, that felt insane to me. So I knew I wanted to be a runner. In middle school, my PE teacher asked me if I would join the cross country team just because they needed more girls, like not because I showed any promise. In fact, I was terrible. Like, I would sit down during like the runs. And one time my PE teacher asked me like, hey, I want you to do like the workout today for cross country, like without stopping. And I look at him and I go, I'm like, you mean without sitting down? And he's like, you sit down. Yeah. I was like, you can't. So like, while I knew I always wanted to be a runner, I always thought I would be a sprinter. Like, I tried out for, I was on the 4x1. I was on the 4x1 in high school. I anchored the 4x1. We were not good, but I anchored the 4x1. And I was a pretty decent, like, 400 runner. I got down to, like, 59 in high school, but, like, no one's knocking on your door to come run for them in college as a 59. And as a senior, I jumped in an 800 in high school and ran like 224, 223, like, but I like smoked the field. Like there wasn't any competition. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm an 800 runner. But then I got hurt and I missed the rest of my senior year. So I was never recruited. I chose San Diego. I knew I always wanted to run. I picked San Diego State because I liked their track program. The scariest thing I ever did was walk into Ron Sheffield's office like the first week of school and knock on the door and ask him if I could run on his team. And he's like, well, what are your times? And I told him and he was like, okay, like you can come try out. And he let me come try out for the team. And like the rest was history. Like I made the team, like I ran 210 in the 8. I got my 400. I'm still so proud of this. I put it on my Olympic trials bio. Like I ran 56 in the 400 in a relay. Right. In college.
Yeah. That's bad.
still is nothing for like collegiate running, but like it meant a lot to me. In my heart, like I think I'm still a 4.8 runner. I'm not. Like that was like a big point in my life where like, I just loved it. I loved it so much. Like I've never, and going back to like key moments, my first invitational in high school. Like, so I'd never ran in spikes before except for on the dirt. I already thought spikes were amazing. Like, what is this shoe? What is this super light shoe that like makes me run so fast? The first time I touched my spikes to an all-weather track, I was just like heaven. Like the angels sang, like the sky opened up with sunshine and rainbows and birds. Like I still remember that day, like stepping onto that track and those spikes and just feeling like this is what I was made to do. Like this is home for me. So like running is very, very deep in my soul. Like, and I love track. Like I would like to maybe get back into some track races and embarrass myself again, but like it's crazy to me that I just got into coaching because I've loved this sport for so long. And like, I don't know why I didn't find coaching until later in life, but yeah, like there've been many key moments in my running career. And I think of them all fondly.
I will tell you, I totally vibe with the way you laid that out because somewhere in a box in my garage, I still have my high school spikes.
And, good for you.
And you are right. There is something about putting spikes on and stepping on an all-weather track that you just feel like, let's go, you know?
Yeah,
let's go. And I was a 400 meter runner as well. So I feel
You know the pain.
Oh, yes, yes.
Running nerds unite. Like you can just feel the passion that we have for running, like jumping off of this screen, microphone, this whole conversation. Absolutely. All right, Mariah, we have to talk about your coaching. You know, I wanted to make sure that we, you know, talk so much about the Olympic trials because that is such a big deal and congratulations on that performance. You are an assistant coach at UC San Diego. That is a huge deal. Tell us, when did you start that position and how's it going?
It's going great. I started about a year and a half ago, so I'm in my second year there. I had done, I'd been a volunteer coach at Cal State San Marcos prior to being at UCSD. It's sort of like everything I've always wanted. It's super long days, like super long days. And my boyfriend can attest that he never sees me. It's a lot, but it's like everything I do, I love. Like a 15-hour day just flies by because it's just all running. It's all talking to athletes. I mean, there's a little bit of like political stuff with like administration and stuff. I don't care for that, but I'm an assistant coach. The head coach can deal with that. So like it's sort of a sweet spot, but like it's been one of those jobs where I think I've experienced the gambit of emotions. Like I've felt like heartbreak for these athletes. I felt like the joy of like setting school records. I've seen them like struggle with balancing like school and running and like social life. And like, you just, you see these young lives developing, like it's such a pivotal point. Like those 19, 20, 21, 22, like they're learning so much about who they are as people and as runners, of course, too. But like, it feels super special to be a part of their development in this time. Like I put my head on my pillow at night and I feel good about what I did for the day. Like I sleep well. Like I feel like super blessed.
You're winning.
You are absolutely winning. Yeah. And what was the reception for you when you came back to work after returning from Orlando?
They're so great. And like, I did miss one of our indoor meets to go to Orlando, like, and only a handful of our distance runners went to that. So like, as I'm like getting ready for my race, I'm, you know, checking to see if results are in. So like, I was a little bit torn on like being away from them, but like, they were all like first thing asking me how my race was before I could even ask them about how theirs was. A bunch of them reached out with like good luck texts and like, we're proud of you texts after the race. Like they've been super, super supportive. And it's fun. It's fun to talk shop with them because you see them growing to love the sport and like sharing that with you. And the team has been great. Couldn't ask for better kids. They're not kids, they're adults, but they're kids to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for them, there's probably nothing better than in seeing your coach who's not only coaching you and giving you advice and workouts, but the fact that you're actually doing the sport at a very high level. Like, I mean, that's got to be incredible for them to see that.
It made me so happy. One of our fifth year seniors, he's a 1500 meter runner, got great speed, but he's also got like incredible strength for like how fast he is. And like, he's going to be graduating. He's like an engineer. Like these kids are all so high academic. They're going to be like rocket scientists, like literally. So he's like, we were talking to him about after college and he's like, I think I might move to Flagstaff and train. And I was like, what? like there is life in running after college, even if Nike isn't knocking on your door to offer you a multi-million dollar contract. And that's something I don't think I realized in college, was that you could have this life in sport beyond it. And I really hope they take that away. And like, just seeing them, a few of them talk about like one of our graduating seniors from last year, reached out to me to train for her first half marathon. She went to Houston, ran like a 1:19. Like, and like, it's been so fun to watch them like embrace the sport after college. And I hope like, if anything, like I show them that, like, you don't have to hang up your running shoes after 22. Oh,
I really, that affects me deep in my soul. I wish I would have known that. I wish I would have known what I know now after college, because I ran in college and then I had some injuries and didn't finish. And if I would have known that, it's like, it doesn't have to be over. Like, you could go to Boulder or Flagstaff or something and hang out. You're young, like you're still figuring it out. And like, you could try and see what would become of your running at a high level. Like, I would have done that, but that's okay. Yeah. Like,
you're still running?
Running now.
They're still very young. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, you always think you're out of time. Like, 29, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to be 30. And like, you get to be 45 and you're just laughing at the people.
Oh, totally. You're like cracking up. You're like, haha, you're such a baby.
Yeah. And I have some great women in my running community who are like, I run for the San Diego Track Club Women's Masters team. And so like, we've got all the way up to like 75, close to 80. And these women are like sports bras and spandex shorts, running cross country, like in spikes and stuff. And I'm like, dude, like, this is awesome. Like that, I want that to be me.
Yeah. I want that to be me too. And however it looks, I'm going to rock it and be like, come on, let's go.
No, I love it. Like, I can't wait. Like, I think like we always think we're old and like, we never really have to be.
No,
you don't. And it is, I think it is a mindset. And I think you can limit yourself on where you can actually go just by thinking and putting what could be considered negativity, even if you laugh about it, you're like, oh, haha, I'm so old. But it's kind of like, there's somewhere in the psyche that says, well, maybe you are too old.
Yeah. And I just,
no, you're absolutely right. Words matter. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Completely. And I just heard a woman say, age is not a number, it's mobility. You know, it was about yoga and stretching and everything. But I was like, yeah, it really is about what you're doing and how much you're doing and the frequency and consistency. That's what does it for you. When you drop it, that's when you start seeing people creaking around. I mean, look, there's a certain amount of wear and tear, but a lot of you're like, you're on the couch, why are you creaking? You know? because you're not doing it enough. Let's go.
No, for reals. You use it or lose it. Like someone was asking me just yesterday about like, oh, well, I don't want to lose my speed by running distance. And I was like, well, that's not how you lose your speed. You lose your speed by not doing speed. Like distance doesn't kill it.
Yeah, right. You can do both for sure. And I think, yeah. Well, would you say that being a 400, 800 meter runner has helped with your distance running?
I think so. I think like I've started to reach that point now where like my strength is like shifted the other way. But I think like early on, especially like having that extra gear, I mean, because I say like part of the reason we still sprint as marathoners is because we can access those fast twitch muscles when our marathon muscles start to fatigue, right? Like we can like draw upon them for extra. I think like having that 400, 800 background, and if nothing but mental, like I just feel like, oh, well, I can always kick. Like I always have like an extra gear. Someone told me once before a race, and I think it was the one my PR at grandma's, I remember someone telling me like, oh, well, you're fast enough that if you like bank time, it won't hurt you, which isn't true. But like it did kind of like give me that peace of mind. Like, oh yeah, it doesn't cost you as much if you go off a little fast, like definitely pull back. But like you do have that like a little extra range of motion or gear set. But I also think like 800 and 400 meter runners just learn to suffer. So that always helps in the marathon.
Okay, Mariah, which course, if you could pick one, would you pick Grandma's, New York, or the course in Orlando?
Picking them for like running your fastest time or for like experience?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Pick one of each.
Yeah. Which one would you pick to run your fastest time? And which one would you pick for experience?
Probably Grandma's for fastest time, provided the weather is good. Like I know that one can also be a little bit precarious. It's hard because those are all like great experiences. I mean, Olympic trials is always going to be great, but I think like if that course in Orlando wasn't Olympic trials, like maybe it wouldn't have been like quite the same experience. Mm-hmm. So I think like, okay, so I hate hills. I hate cold weather, but I loved New York. I thought like it was just such a cool, cool race to be in. I would never run my fastest time there. That bridge at mile 15, like just about like destroyed me, but it was just like so cool to like the people there were great. Like you always hear stories about New Yorkers being like tough and stuff, but like they were the nicest people in the world and they were efficient. Like when it was time for me to leave the hotel, like the concierge or whoever just like swept up and like grabbed my bags and took me out to the taxi and like sent me off to the airport. And I'm like, this is my kind of efficiency. Like I don't have to talk to anyone. Like let's just go. But I like really like sort of fell in love with the city and the race was like so well put on. And like, I thought it was just a really cool experience.
I know you were saying, I was reading in one of your posts that, you know, when you got to like, I believe it was mile 8, you had a little bit of a hard time. How did you end up finishing?
In New York? New York went into like, this is a long run mode, like right around mile 8. Like I remember being somewhat like I knew it was hilly, but I sort of attributed that just to the bridges. So like when I turned onto the mile 8 street and I saw that it was just like this long uphill, it sort of like took whatever wind I had left in my sails and like depleted it. I was like okay. So like that became a race of like, so I don't know, like find your mantra. Like I was thinking about every little trick in the book. Like I had read something earlier that month about how like thinking of death helps you in marathons. And so I was like thinking about my dog that had died in August and like none of this helped. I am also like a woman of faith. So I don't think God cares who wins a race, but I know he's with me. Like that is one of my things. Like God's never let me down. I've been through some dark times and like I've always had a roof over my head and like food in my belly. And like, while I know he doesn't care if I finish this race, like I know he's not going to like put me through anything that I can't like handle. So like, for me, it's always this prayer during the race of like, okay, just help me not to quit. And like, gosh, I've said that prayer like so many times, not just in races, but like in life, like it's such a meaningful like statement to me. And like, I just have this piece of like knowing that he's going to carry me through.
Yeah. I like that better than thinking about the dog dying. I mean, is the psychology of that, like, well,
I don't know.
the dog, your breath is worse, so this can't be that bad. I mean, I guess, right? It could be worse.
I wish I could remember what the rest of the article was on that, but like, I definitely was at a point in the race where I was like just grasping at straws.
Yeah, like, but I'd much rather be, you know, singing some hymn in my head or saying a prayer just to get, like you said, just to finish than thinking about my dog or any other dog for that matter.
But so, like, you know what made me cry? And I want to, you know, ask you what, if you were heard some of Dakota Lindworm's interviews, and she was talking about her faith and how there was a point where she was really calling on the Lord to help her to finish. And the way she was saying it so passionately, I was like crying. I was like, this is so, like, she's such a beautiful person. And then when you were talking about your faith and calling on God, and I was just like, these are my people. Like, such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. And like, it's that, like, there was that song we sang in Sunday school as a kid, like, the peace that passes understanding. Like, you can't really, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no reason you should be calm in some of these moments, but like, it's beyond understanding. Like, he provides that peace for us, for me. Like,
I love that.
Yeah.
So Grandma's Marathon, I'm we're going to talk about San Diego, but I need to touch upon Grandma's Marathon because there's been so many runners that have had amazing performances on that course, and you got your Olympic qualifying time. What makes that course so special?
I think it strikes a nice balance between being like a world major with like so much hype around it and like not being so small that no one cares that you're running. Like, I've done some really small marathons before, and those are just rough. Mm. Like, you're out there like by yourself. But like, the city of Duluth really comes out for that race. Like, they get excited for Grandma's Marathon being in town. Like, they come out and line the streets. There's little kids with like orange slices, like high-fiving you. And I think every race has that to a certain extent, but this has like that small town feel to it, where like we care that you're coming to our city and running here, because like, I don't think there's a lot of tourism in Duluth. I could be wrong. Like, it's a beautiful city. Like, you're right there along Lake Superior, but it's really cold there a lot of times too. And it is a really pretty course, in my opinion. Like, I've heard other people say that it's just like 26 miles of Lake Superior and like that view gets old. But I do think like some of the cities you go through and wind around are like really cute, and you always have the potential for a tailwind, which I did get the day that I ran my PR there. Nice. And I didn't realize how much of a tailwind it was until I took the final turn and I hit the headwind and I was like, oof, this is not nice. But it's just like, the weather's never too cold, never too hot. When I've been there, I guess it can get hot, but like, I've been there 4 or 5 times and it's always been like 50s, right around there.
Yeah. Nice.
It's a good way to run. It's good
running weather. That's good running weather, and especially in June.
Right.
So
in June, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we want to talk about San Diego. We love San Diego. Yeah. We are right up north from you, like what, two hours? We're in Los Angeles. So,
yeah.
So we're going to come to San Diego. I would love to go on a run with you. Where are you going to take us on a run?
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's me. So it's going to be flat.
I love it already.
All right.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of running Coronado. I like the island out there. You can like go around the naval base. You can go through like some of the like $1 million homes. You can go by the ocean, and then you can hit the bike path that goes down the Silver Strand. Like, and it's just straight, beautiful. Like, you can really lock on to paces there and like crank out some good miles. So it's great for training. And it strikes a nice balance of being like fast for training and like not being boring. So it's probably my favorite place to run. It's a bit of a drive for me. I don't get down there as often as I would like, but I do really love it.
Now, do you need to make sure you bring a hat and go super early? Because like, there's no shade, you know, because I've done that on the Strand sometimes and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Well, I'm a lizard, so I like the sun.
Okay. But, okay.
but yeah, hat's probably a good idea. Or like, you know, go early when it's not like beating down on you. I think I started a long run there once at like 11:30 in August, and that did get a little hot.
Yeah. What about places to dine out in San Diego? Where are you exactly? Because I know San Diego is huge. Where do you live?
Yeah. I live in Escondido, which is like probably 35 minutes north of the airport. Like, so I'm inland, a little cheaper rent in Escondido.
Mm-hmm. Love Escondido.
Yeah,
no,
it sounds like, I've always heard good things about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, in my hood, there's some like little places that I like that are more like hole in the wall shops. Like, I don't know that they're big like tourist attractions, but there's a great Salvadorian place down the street from my house. There's like a pho place that I really like. If I'm going like more towards touristy or like popular areas for people to go, Encinitas has a place called Fish 101. It's right there on the 101 in Encinitas. And they have like really affordable and tasty like fish tacos. And like, if you like oysters, they always have like happy hour oyster specials. They have like drink specials. And it's like really like that blend of, it's not upscale. It's like relaxed. Like, you can go pretty much everywhere in San Diego. You can wear a sweatshirt too, but like, this is like, they're on the beach. It has a nice vibe to it. It's like low key. You walk up to the counter and order and they bring it to you. And like, the food now is good.
I know it's a local favorite for you, so you probably just go there and don't think about it. But what are the names of your pho place and El Salvadorian food? Because
hole in the wall places.
Yeah, those are good.
Yes.
Yeah. The pho place is called Pho Saigon. It's on Washington and Escondido Boulevard. It's in the same shopping center as like a Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Valvoline station.
That's the best.
Yeah. It's family owned. Like, they come out, like, I know the woman that works there. She always comes to our table and like recognizes us. And we don't go that often because we're like homebodies, but, there always thanks us for coming, asks us how we're doing, like, great little place. Cuscatlan is the name of the El Salvadorian place. It's right there on the main strip of Escondido, Grand Avenue. And they've got like amazing pupusas and like the cabbage salad and tamales and stuff like that that are really good.
That sounds nice. Delicious. I have not had Salvadorian food, so I would be totally up for that.
Find out about that. And then
I have people that have vouched for it who are from El Salvador that like it. So.
That's always good. If you can get somebody from that place and they're like, they did it right. Then you know you're winning. Yeah. What about breakfast? Like, is there a good, whatever type of breakfast you like? What's your best breakfast option?
So we're like a mile from Peterson's Donuts, which is like the famous 24-hour donut shop in Escondido. Like, that's really great. I guess that's not exclusively breakfast. You can have donuts any time of day. But where do I go for breakfast? Like, Breakfast Republic is good. It's kind of a chain. Like, that's one that we go to sometimes after, like, with recruits for UCSD. They have one in like Liberty Station, I think. Yeah, it's tasty. You have a good Eggs Benedict.
That sounds good.
Okay.
I want the donuts. I'm all for the donuts.
Yeah. What's your go-to donut?
Well, what did you say? What is our go-to donut spot?
Or like, what's your favorite donut?
You know what? Sidecar. We really like Sidecar. Blue Star.
DK's.
And DK's, because they're open 24/7.
And it's quick, right? And then, you know, Sidecar, you're like, ooh, I'm splurging on a donut today.
They're kind of pricey. It's kind of like ridiculous, you know, a little ridiculous, but they are good.
It's worth it then.
Yeah, for sure. Like, when you come to LA, like, call me and we'll go on a run and we'll go to Sidecar for donuts afterwards.
We'll do, for sure.
Where should we stay, or where should people stay when they come to Escondido?
Oh, not in Escondido.
Okay.
I mean, I would think there's probably some nice Airbnbs, because there are some like nice houses. I don't know of any off the top of my head. The hotels in Escondido are a little bit like, probably not. Like, you probably, but Rancho Bernardo is just down the road. The Rancho Bernardo in there is like super famous, beautiful golf course, like nice community. Like, that's a nice place to stay. I've gone to dinner there. I haven't stayed there, but like, it's really pretty, really beautiful.
Nice.
I've heard good things about Rancho Bernardo. That sounds good.
Yeah.
What are your favorite races? Because we know you're racing a lot down in San Diego. So what are your favorites?
So, of course, Carlsbad 5000, like, Ned Popleski puts that one on. Like, he took it over a couple years ago. Like, it's an iconic race. Like, my Road 5K PR is from there. They do a really great job. They separate the races into, like, you have a Masters Men's, a Masters Women's, Open Men, Open Women. So you get to really compete against your peers and see where you stack up. And then they do, like, a professional race at the end where you can watch some, like, real honest to goodness pros just like rip a 5K, and it's like so amazing to see how fast they go. And again, like, I'm starstruck and I'm like, yeah, having to like pull me back, I'm like, that's my hero. But like, that's a great one. Good community involvement. Like, people come out and like cheer you on, and it's right down the 101, which is beautiful, like a beautiful course. The Kook Run, which is happening on Sunday, it's Super Bowl Sunday pretty much every year. It also runs down the 101, but further south. It starts in Encinitas and like heads down towards like Del Mar, and then you flip and come back up. It's a tough course because it's got most of the downhill in the first half, and then you come back up and like hit uphill at miles 4 and 5, and like that's not fun. But it's like it's another one where you get such great community involvement in it that like it doesn't matter that it's not necessarily the fastest 10K you'll ever run. I like San Diego Half Marathon. Like, that is a really cool one if you are like sort of like wanting to see San Diego in a half marathon. Like, it does a good tour of like the downtown area. You go through Point Loma. The only bad part of this race is mile 9:10 is like uphill, like a long grinding uphill, but it's worth it because you get to the top and then the last 3 miles are downhill. Like, you come back down through Balboa Park, like through like the downtown area, past the Padres Stadium, and like get to finish in the Gas Lamp District. So like at least your hard effort at mile 9 pays off. That is it's a pretty cool like scenic course.
Are you referring to America's Finest City Half, that one? No. Or is it a different one?
No, that one is in August, and I've actually never done AFC. The San Diego Marathon, I think it's now called the GovX San Diego Marathon. It's usually in March, like right around the time we change the clocks.
Okay.
And it's like the weather's usually good for that one, a little chilly at the start, and then you know, it's San Diego, so it's not ever going to get too bad.
Not that
bad. Yeah. Yeah, I really want to do the Kook Run. I just like that just came upon my radar, and I was like, and it's this weekend. Yeah. And I was I want to do that sometime. But I'm glad I got the lowdown from you about the huge uphill on the way back.
I mean, again, like, I'm hill sensitive. So like I go up a curb and I'm like, ooh, that hill. But like this one is like, it is uphill. It's not like insurmountable. Like, it's like a gradual uphill. You got to grind a little bit, but I'm probably making it sound worse than it is. It's just like, I'm sensitive to those things. I'm always looking for fast courses. Like, one of the things that kills me is when like people train so hard for a race and then they pick a stupid race to let their fitness play out on. I'm like, why would you do that? Like, you're so fit. You're
right, gonna
run some sort of like monstrously hilly race and not get to see how fit you are. But like, the Kook is fair. It's not like it's tough. It's not a give me race for a PR, but you can go out there and run fast on it.
Okay.
So now, that being said, I must ask you this. How did you feel in Grandma's Marathon at, what is it, mile 23 is the Lemon Drop Hill? Like, how did you deal with that?
So luckily, that was not my first time up Lemon Drop. Like, the first time I did Grandma's, I did the half. And like, I was so worried about Lemon Drop. I just kept reading about Lemon Drop and reading about Lemon Drop. And like, it was not that bad. So like, it's sort of, I call it like Harry Pottering your way through something. Like, you know you can do it because you've already done it. Like, when he like makes the Patronus appear. I don't know if you like Harry Potter. You might have no idea what I'm talking about.
I mean, I still like, do. I mean, I like him, but I don't know all the details.
But like, yeah. So like, getting up Lemon Drop when I got to that in Grandma's the year that I PR'd, like, I wasn't worried about it. Like, I knew I'd gotten up it before. Like, when it did get a little tough, but I was like, yeah, you've done this before. Like, you're not, like, you just kind of put it out of your mind that it's going to be an issue. Like, this isn't an issue. I've done this before.
Yeah. Mind over matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about running stores? Now, you may, as a coach at a college, you may not ever have to go into one, but what about the rest of us visiting San Diego if we find ourselves in need?
Yeah. My two favorites, and they both have like super knowledgeable staff. Milestone Running. There's one in North Park and there's one in Pacific Beach. They know what they're talking about there. Like, a couple of the other San Diego guys that qualified for trials work at Milestone. Like, so they're not going to steer you wrong. They're going to get you like in the right shoes. And it's like a locally owned store. Big fan of Milestone. And then Fleet Feet. We have a Fleet Feet in San Diego. I know the owners there. I've never been led astray. Like, I go and I tell them what I'm looking for. Like, I was really into the Nike Pegasus for a while. And then like, I couldn't get them during COVID. And so Katie, one of the store owners there, she's like, well, try the New Balance 880s. It's kind of like their Pegasus. And like, yeah, that was the shoe. Like, I knew it. So they're really good there. Milestone and Fleet Feet.
Nice. Milestone and Fleet Feet. Okay. Well, San Diego is so huge, but it is so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places in the US. So people that are coming, whether they're first time or it's a repeat visit, where would you say you need to do this or see this when you come to San Diego?
Yeah. So I think like just the 101 in general, like there's so many cute places up along that. We're also like, we're known for the San Diego Zoo, but I would say that if you have a little bit of time, make your way up to Escondido to the Safari Park. I think like the Safari Park is like such a different experience seeing the animals like in more open environments. Like they have this whole like giant valley where the wildebeest and the giraffes like just run free and you can take the tram around it and sort of see them in more of like a friendly environment. And it's like, as a runner, like it's like, so we have season passes. We live about 5 miles from there. Like we'll go in the afternoon for a walk. Like, oh, let's just go walk around the safari park and like take in the sights. So like, I'm a big fan of that. What else? Like, there's just a number of trails that you can just go for hikes on and stuff. Like, I don't necessarily love running trails, but like walking them is different.
Yeah, the safari park.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't think we've done that. No. I want to put that on my list. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, let me know. I'll go with you. I'll show you around.
Yeah, cool. I would love that. All right, you guys, we're making plans over here.
Yeah.
Donuts and Safari Park.
We like to ask our guests the very last question, which is, if you could run anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
I think are we talking like a race or just like anywhere for like to go for a
anywhere,
run?
Like it could be for anything. Like I really want to race here or I really just want to go on vacation and run here, whatever you choose.
Gosh, I think like I would love to run the Berlin Marathon. Like it's high up on my list. I don't know if I'll ever get out there to do it. Like it's a big trip and it's also like right in the middle of cross country season or at the start of it. So like, I don't know that I'll get out there, but I've heard it's a really pretty course. I'm a sucker for a flat, fast course. So like, yeah, I think like that would be like, if I could just go off and go, like that would be the one for me.
I think nice. You could rip a really fast time in Berlin. And I really feel you on that answer, Mariah, because our son is a high school cross country kid. And it's like, I literally, it's so hard for me to plan any marathons in the fall because I don't want to miss like some of the key races. And like, that's why I haven't, you know, Berlin just falls in the middle of all that.
Yeah. Yeah. But someday we'll get there.
Someday we will.
Yeah.
This has been such a treat. It's so nice to meet you. And I've just loved this conversation so much. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. You've been super easy to talk to. I appreciate it.
Oh, cool. Now, by the way, if anyone wants to follow along with more of your running, your personal running, or seek out any advice as a coach, where should they find you?
I'm on Instagram, Mariah Earle, at Mariah Earle is just simple.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. We'll put it all in the show notes too, you guys, so you can click on it and go follow Mariah. She's doing awesome things, and we're so happy to have you. So we'll see you in San Diego.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Mariah Earle, our conversation was a ton of fun. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And congratulations on your second time to the U.S. Olympic trials and wonderful performances at both. We are positive that all of the insights you shared on your training process will add so much value to the lives of the runners who are listening. Even for our self-professed homebody, you gave great insight on how to enjoy San Diego and Escondido. Everyone follow Mariah at Mariah Earle on Instagram.
Hey friends, you know what will help us to grow our show even more in 2024? It's pretty simple. Share the show, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast content. That will help new listeners find our show. Follow us on social media. Sweet Run, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Nat Runs Far, you can follow me anywhere. Follow me at Nat Runs Far. And as always, thank you to our sponsor, Inside Tracker. Thanks so much for listening, you guys, and we will see you next week.